Chapter 13. Secrets of the Past. For the next 2.5 weeks, the Dark Angels and the people of Diamat worked day and night to prepare for the coming storm. Governor Kulik sent troops into the countryside to locate camps of refugees, conscripting all the healthy men and women he could find and putting them to work constructing new fortifications under the experienced eye of Johnson's veteran warriors. High above the forge, Johnson's warships lay at anchor. Even the near-derelict Duchess Arbellatrice, which had been towed back to Diomat by the light cruisers of the scout force and were being worked over night and day by Magos Archoy's best tech adepts. Flocks of cargo shuttles came and went daily, restocking the battle group's depleted stores of ammunition and heavy ordnance. Other craft ferried Governor Kulik and Magos Archoy to and from the Invincible Reason on a regular basis to confer with Primarch Johnson and refine their battle plan. Nemiel was busier than he'd ever been. When he wasn't managing repair and resupply schedules or fielding requests from the captains of the battle group, he was shuttling down to the planet's surface to help supervise the construction of defensive positions throughout the Grey Zone and implementing Johnson's organizational changes to the Planetary Defense Force. He ate little and slept even less, devoting his full energy and attention to every task that was put in front of him. The officers of the fleet and members of Kulik's staff commented on his dedication and zeal and held him up as an inspiration to the men under their command. Nemiel would wave away their praise. He was merely setting a proper example, he would say, as any chaplain ought. In truth, he consumed himself with work because it kept his growing doubts at bay. He couldn't help but think about his conversation with Johnson and his evasive replies. The Primarch wasn't a brigand, Nemiel knew. He hadn't come all the way to Diomat to sack its forges as Horus's men had done. Yet he couldn't shake the notion that Johnson wasn't telling him the entire truth, and that went against everything Nemiel thought that the Legion stood for. More than once, he found himself wishing that Luther and Zahariel were still with them. He found himself sorely missing his cousin's unwavering idealism. It was late in the day when the Primarch summoned Nemiel to his sanctum. He found Johnson seated at his favorite spot beneath the towering viewports along the port side of the chamber. Red light shone along the side of Johnson's face as he bent over a series of aerial images spread atop a low wooden table. He glanced up at the Redemptor's approach. "There you are, Nemiel," he said tersely, gathering the images together into a small stack. "You've been keeping yourself scarce of late."
"Not by design, my lord," Nemiel replied guardedly. "There's a great deal to be done before the rebels return."
Johnson grunted in agreement. "True enough." He looked up at Nemiel again and smiled. "Wipe that guilty look off your face, Nemiel. I wasn't accusing you of anything." He leaned back in his chair. "What's the current status of the battle group?" Nemiel relaxed a bit, glad to be back on familiar terrain.
"Our scout force has nearly completed resupply and will be ready for operations within 5 hours," he reported from memory. "The strike cruisers Amardis and Adzikl have finished their most critical repairs and have begun reloading their stores of ammunition and ordnance. Replacement Stormbirds have arrived from the surface to replace those lost in combat. The heavy cruisers Flamberge and Lord Dante report all repairs complete, and they expect to finish resupply within the hour."
He paused.
"Iron Duke reports that all of her weapon batteries are back in action, but damage to her hull is so extensive she'll need to be dry docked to effect any meaningful repairs. The crew of Duchess Arbellatrice has been working day and night, and Captain Rashid insists that she can be returned to action within a few weeks, but the tech adepts assigned to her believe that the ship is a lost cause."
"Inform Captain Rashid that he has 48 hours to do what he can. If the ship isn't capable of standing in the battle line by then, she will have to be abandoned and her crew reassigned to the other ships in the group," Johnson said. "That's all the time we can afford."
"Have there been any new developments?"
Nemiel said, suddenly alert. The Primarch shook his head.
"Not yet. But based on the distance between systems and the minimum amount of time I estimate Horus would need to assemble another fleet and send it on its way, the rebels could arrive in the system imminently. The War Master must attack again as soon as possible, or he won't have enough time to strip the forge of its resources and put them to use back on Istvan."
Johnson held up the small stack of images.
"Which brings us to this."
He held the images out to Nemiel. The Redemptor took them and began looking them over.
These look like aerial images of the Forge complex, he said with a scowl.
Specifically, the warehouse and depot facilities along the southern edge of the Forge closest to the gateway, Johnson confirmed. You'll note that a number of the buildings have been highlighted for ease of reference.
Nemiel's scowl deepened. I'm not sure I understand, my lord, he said, feeling suddenly uneasy.
Johnson studied Nemiel in silence for a moment. Magos Archoy hasn't complied with my request for a full inventory of his stores, he said carefully. Time is running out. Since he won't give me the information I need, I'll have to gather it another way.
But that's not correct, Nemiel protested. Archoy has provided detailed reports of the materiel he has on hand. I've seen them myself.
The Primarch's eyes narrowed slightly. I have reason to believe that those reports are incomplete.
Why is that?
Nemiel pressed. His unease swelled until it threatened to become something akin to despair.
Why are we here, my lord? You claim that we're here to stop Horus, but the logic of the situation and your own actions belie this. What else is there that has drawn you here?
Johnson straightened fractionally in his chair. His face was calm, but there was a steely edge in his green eyes. Are you calling me a liar, Brother Redemptor Nemiel? He asked. Nemiel's breath caught in his throat. Suddenly he sensed the deadly precipice that now figuratively yawned at his feet. Yet he would be damned if he allowed himself to be intimidated into silence and compromise his sacred oaths, not even by the Primarch himself.
Do you deny that you have a hidden motive for bringing us here? He said.
The Redemptor boldly met the Primarch's imposing stare, ready to accept the consequences. Johnson glared at Nemiel a moment more, his expression calculating, before slowly nodding his head. That was well done, Johnson allowed. You have the makings of a good interrogator, I think. He spread his hands. Diamat is important to the War Master for reasons other than ammunition and building materials, he said. I judge that it was best to keep those reasons a secret for purposes of operational security. Restriction of information isn't the same thing as deception, Nemiel.
I never said you'd lied to us, my lord, Nemiel pointed out. But what possible good does it do to withhold vital information from your own warriors and allies?
Johnson frowned. As a knight of the Order, I should think that would be obvious, he said. Every facet of your training on Caliban was governed by custom, order, and ritual. An aspirant could not become a novice until he'd passed certain tests to prove his knowledge, character, and worthiness. Likewise, a novice could not rise to the ranks of knighthood without progressing through many ranks of knowledge and skill. Even upon reaching the coveted rank of knight, there were still degrees of initiation and rank that opened each warrior to new levels of knowledge and expertise, all the way to the lofty rank of Grand Master itself. Why was that so? Why didn't the masters begin inducting the novices straight away into the higher mysteries?
Because a novice wouldn't know what to do with the training, Nemiel answered at once. Not before mastering a great many basic skills first. Trying to employ those advanced tactics without the proper foundation would just get them killed.
The Primarch smiled. Precisely. Knowledge is power, Nemiel. Never forget that. And power in the wrong hands can inflict terrible harm. Nemiel considered this.
I understand, my lord, he said at length. Is there anything in particular I should be looking for?
Johnson studied him a moment longer, then nodded to himself. Vehicles, he said. Approximately 6 to 8 of them. The references I saw were unclear on the exact number. They were reportedly built over 150 years ago and would likely have been placed into storage somewhere in the complex.
What kind of vehicles? Nemiel asked.
War machines, Johnson replied. Like nothing either of us have ever seen before. Nemiel frowned.
But if the Mechanicum has these machines at their disposal, why aren't they using them?
Johnson shrugged. It's possible that Archoy doesn't know they're here, or the Mechanicum has decided to withhold them for their own use, much as they did with their Escitarii. He raised a warning finger. What's important is that the War Master needs them, and we have to keep them out of his hands.
How does the War Master know about these war machines?
Nemiel asked. How else? The Primarch said. He's the one who commissioned them in the first place.
It was a long and circuitous drive from the Xanthus starport to the southern entrance of the forge complex. Nemiel's Rhino, fresh from the assembly lines at Diamat and still showing its black coat of manufactory primer, had to first head north, past a series of fortified checkpoints, then eastward through a literal maze of narrow streets. The tramway was no longer passable. Over the last 2 weeks, the entire length of the road had been sowed with mines, cut by permacrete tank barriers, and festooned with kilometres of molly wire. Heavy vehicles trying to force their way northeastward towards the forge would have to fight their way through one obstacle after another, all the while coming under fire from concealed bunkers on both the north and south sides of the tramway. The ash wastes to the south of the tramway were passable by infantry, but not vehicles, and were covered by the Dragoons' remaining artillery batteries. The only alternative was to press north and east, just as Nemiel's Rhino had done. But the rebels would be forced to break through each set of checkpoints and then find a safe path through streets that had been riddled with mines, tank traps, and more ambush points. Neither route was completely impassable, as the defenders knew, but breaching them would take a great deal of time, something the enemy had in short supply. The southern gateway had also seen heavy reinforcement since Nemiel had last been there. Work parties had expanded the walls on both sides of the tramway and refitted the destroyed weapon emplacements with new heavy guns taken from the forge. Archoi's adepts had also installed remote sentry guns at strategic points along the walls, and a cadre of hulking Skitari stood watch over the battlements alongside Kulik's dragoons. Magos Archoi had proposed embedding Skitari units with the Governor's men and the Dark Angels alike to enhance their combat power, and the Primarch saw the wisdom of the idea. Most of the Skitari were assigned to the understrength Dragoons, who were given the responsibility of defending the tramway and the Grey Zone. The Dark Angels were to be held back in a mobile reserve to reinforce key areas or deal with unexpected enemy attacks. The Dragoons spent their days labouring over their fortifications and then sleeping in them, while the Astartes had been assigned temporary quarters in a number of empty warehouses inside the forge complex, close to the gateway. A trio of Skitari Praetorians had been assigned to each squad for added reinforcement. Nemiel's Rhino drew up to the gateway and ground to a halt in a billowing cloud of dust. Civilian workers wiped sweat from their eyes and peered through the haze as the Redemptor disembarked and worked his way through the reinforced permacrete barriers that had been laid in an alternating pattern between the towering bastions. Dragoons and Skitari alike watched Nemiel from the battlements. His gaze searched among them, looking for the helmeted heads of his squad. "Over here, brother!" Cole shouted, waving his arm from the top of the southern bastion. Nemiel waved in reply and headed up to join him. He found Cole and Tech Marine Ascalon at the topmost level, supervising the installation of advanced ballistic calculators that would help the Dragoons call down effective artillery fire on the attacking rebels. A trio of fearsome-looking Skitari stood nearby, observing the proceedings with almost mechanical detachment. "Come to check up on us, brother," Cole growled good-naturedly. Nemiel looked over the crew of Dragoons and fretful tech adepts, installing the sensitive machinery, and managed a grin.
"It's been too quiet lately. The Primarch believes you're up to something."
Cole grunted. "Always," he said, completely deadpan. "Tell him I'm touched by his concern." The Redemptor glanced over at the Skitari.
"How are the new squad mates?"
he asked. Cole grimaced.
"Not much for conversation, other than that strange hash that Ascalon insists is speech," he said. "Mostly, they just stand around and stare at everything."
"Has Magos Archoi got them billeted with you?"
"Oh, yes," Cole replied.
His tone was mild, but the look in his eyes spoke volumes of his unhappiness about the situation.
"Second company is spread out among three adjoining warehouses about half a kilometre from here."
Nemiel nodded thoughtfully. That was going to complicate things a little.
"Where's the rest of the squad right now?"
"Over at the North Bastion," Cole replied. "Helping teach some new recruits how to work the heavy weapons. Why?"
"I'll be taking five of you back up into orbit with me in a few hours," Nemiel replied, and raised a forestalling hand. "Don't ask me why, because I don't know. The Primarch has a job for us."
"Well, that can't be good," Cole said with typical fatalism.
He glanced over at the work party.
"We'll be down here a bit after nightfall. Is that soon enough?"
Nemiel glanced west, where the sun was already low over the distant ruins of Xanthus.
"Nightfall sounds just about right,"
he said with a nod. 3 hours later, the Astartes climbed up the rear ramp of Nemiel's idling rhino and found their seats along the narrow benches that lined both sides of the troop compartment. As the ramp clanked shut, the armored personnel carrier revved its petrochem engines and lurched into motion. Brother Sergeant Cole had Techmarine Ascalon plus Marthes, Vardus, and Ephrael. No sooner had the APC started moving than the squad leader turned to Nemiel and said, "Now, what's this nonsense about the Primarch sending for us personally?" Nemiel grimaced.
"I had to think of something halfway plausible to pull you out of there without the Skitari making anything of it," he said. "The Primarch wants us to perform a reconnaissance mission inside the Forge complex itself."
As the rhino worked its way slowly back down the access road towards the gateway, Nemiel produced the images that Johnson had given him and laid out the details of the mission. At the mention of the secret war machines, the attitude of the squad turned very serious indeed.
"We've got a lot of ground to cover in just a few hours," Nemiel
said at the conclusion of the briefing.
"Brother Ascalon, what sort of threats are we likely to encounter?"
"There will be an array of electronic sensors covering each of the storage sites," he replied, "plus Skitari patrols with full spectrum Auspex arrays. If these war machines are as valuable as the Primarch believes them to be, they may be covered by additional security as well."
Nemiel nodded.
"We can avoid the patrols," he said confidently. "Can you get us past the sensors?"
Brother Ascalon considered the problem for several seconds before nodding.
"I can at least get us close enough to determine the contents of each building," he said.
"All right," Nemiel said with a nod. "As soon as we're out of the rhino, we go vox silent. Only verbal signals or hand signs. We can't risk having our transmissions detected. Questions?"
There were none.
Nemiel rose from his bench with a curt nod and opened the rhino's portside door. With a quick check up and down the dark access road, he jumped lightly from the vehicle. The five other Astartes followed suit, reflexively fanning out into a standard tactical formation as they moved quickly into the deeper shadows between two large warehouses. Nemiel drew his bolt pistol, leaving his Crozius Aquilum attached to his belt.
"Let's try not to get into another fight with our allies," he said quietly.
Quiet chuckles rose from the darkness.
"Ascalon, you've got point. I know it's not your usual position, but you'll spot the Forge's security systems well before the rest of us. Brother Vardus, you're covering our back trail. Everyone clear? Then let's get to work."
They worked their way through the vast forge complex for hours as Diomat's moon rose in a thin crescent and passed through a hazy ochre sky. Now and again, they would come upon a patrol of Skitari. These tech guard weren't the massive, bionically enhanced killing machines of the Praetorians, but were simple soldiers, akin to the Tanagran Dragoons, albeit in fine carapace armor and wielding high-power lasguns. Compact Auspex units were mounted to the front of their helmets and flipped down over their faces, like strange insectoid masks. They moved with speed and skill, constantly alert and watchful, but the Astartes' enhanced senses allowed them to detect the patrols and find cover long before the Skitari were in a position to see them. Aside from the occasional patrols, the Astartes encountered no other signs of life. There were hundreds of warehouses and storage depots located in the southern sector of the Forge complex. Most were single-story structures, but others were tall, cavernous buildings with massive rolling doors that could hold entire companies of heavy battle tanks. Without the locations provided by Johnson, there would have been no way that they could have completed their search in a single night. As it was, Nemiel had begun to fear that they would be working right up until dawn. At each of the structures highlighted on Nemiel's images, the squad would take up a defensive position and let Brother Ascalon go ahead to inspect the building's contents. Each time, the tech marine would emerge, shaking his head, and the squad would move on to the next building down the line. By midnight, they were halfway through their search pattern and were doubling back eastward, heading for the warehouse district on the other side of the access road. They were well north of the billet set aside for the Astartes ground force and could see the towering fortress-like manufactories off to the north, spreading out in a rough circle from the foot of the slumbering volcano. Tall, narrow smokestacks and squat cooling towers rose into the sky like the bones of dead gods, blackened and pitted by age. Cold, white lights shone like stars from the slopes of the conical mountain, while off to the northeast, the towering monolithic structures of the Titan Foundry shone with sparkling pinpoints of sapphire, crimson, and emerald.
I've moved through dead cities that weren't as eerie as this, Brother Sergeant Cole murmured beside Nemiel. I thought forges were like mechanical beehives. Where is everyone? Nemiel shrugged, his eyes searching the darkness off to the south for signs of danger, just as Cole kept his attention focused on the north.
Magos Archoy mentioned at one of the strategy meetings that he'd ordered all surviving tech adepts and acolytes into a series of deep shelters near the heart of the complex. Only a few hundred volunteers are still above ground or in orbit, working with the battle group and helping supply our forces on the ground. Archoy said they'd suffered enough losses during the last raid and he wasn't going to permit any more if he could help it.
Cole grunted dubiously. It's an awfully clean battlefield, don't you think?
Nemiel glanced sidelong at the sergeant.
What are you talking about?
Brother Sergeant Cole shrugged, eyeing the walls of the dark buildings to his right.
Where are the shell holes? The scorch marks? Where are the burnt-out buildings?
If the fighting was so heavy in this sector, why haven't we seen any sign of it yet? The observation nearly stopped Nemiel in his tracks. Something tugged at the back of his mind. Something else strange and out of place, but he couldn't quite put a finger on it.
Maybe the battle sites are still up ahead, he replied, frowning to himself. Archoy and his warriors came at us from the northeast. Let's see what lies up ahead.
But for the next 3 hours, Nemiel and Cole saw only more of the same. Building after building arrayed in laser-perfect lines, their permacrete walls unblemished, save for decades of stains and pitting etched by acid rain. Nemiel's disquiet grew stronger. Something was very wrong. Barely 2 hours before dawn, Ascalon found something. They had reached an enormous depot building, 2 stories high and wide enough for a pair of super-heavy tanks to pass through its entryway side by side. The tech marine moved stealthily inside while the rest of the squad watched for Mechanicum patrols. He was back in less than 5 minutes.
You need to see this, he said to Nemiel.
The Redemptor rose to his feet and signaled for the squad to follow him. Ascalon led the warriors along a convoluted route that brought them past the cordon of sensors surrounding the perimeter of the structure. Soon, Nemiel found himself standing in a vast cavernous structure supported by soaring metal arches curving high overhead.
It's empty,
he said to Ascalon. His voice echoed faintly in the deserted building.
No, not quite, the tech marine said, turning about and pointing to the inner surface of the depot's towering metal doors.
Nemiel turned about and saw that the metal slabs were splashed and streaked with dried gore. He stepped forwards, his enhanced vision easily picking out details even in the near absence of light.
Lots of carbon scoring, he observed. Looks like high-power lasgun fire.
Cole nodded, stepping up beside Nemiel. A gauntleted finger moved through the air, roughly tracing the outline of the stains.
I'd guess 10 to 15 individuals shot at close range, he reckoned. Judging by the intensity of the lasgun fire, they must have been nearly blown apart. This wasn't a battle. It was an execution.
I thought much the same thing, Ascalon said.
He stepped up to the doors and laid a fingertip against one of the dried stains.
Not all of this is blood. Some of it is bionic lubricant or coolant.
Brother Sergeant Cole scowled.
Didn't Magos Archoy say that Archmagos Vitalis was killed during the fighting?
Nemiel felt his skin grow cold.
The Magos never said who it was that killed Vitalis.
Cole stared at Nemiel.
You think there's been some kind of coup?
The veteran sergeant sounded incredulous.
Archoy was in the area with a large force of Praetorians, Nemiel mused. The attack would have given him an excellent opportunity. He could kill Vitalis and the other senior magi, dispose of the bodies, and no one the wiser.
Suddenly, Nemiel's eyes widened.
Bodies! By the Emperor, that's what was missing! The bodies!
Cole shook his head in consternation. What are you talking about now?
Governor Kulik said there was an entire company of dragoons covering the entrance to the southern gateway, Nemiel explained. The rebels supposedly overran them, but there were no dead Imperial troops anywhere. What happened to the bodies?
The sergeant frowned.
I don't know. I doubt they just got up and walked away.
But perhaps they did, Nemiel said. What if the dragoon company guarding the gateway was betrayed by the very people they were there to defend?
Cole's face turned grim.
That would mean Magos Archoy is in league with Horus, he said. We need to inform the Primarch at once.
Nemiel held up a hand.
Not yet. Not without more proof than this, he said,
indicating the blood-splashed wall.
He paused, contemplating the tall doors, then glanced back at the empty echoing space.
What was Vitalis doing here in the first place?
He wondered.
Maybe the war machines we're looking for were stored here, and he'd come to check on them.
The building's certainly big enough to hold 6 to 8 large vehicles, Ascalon confirmed. There's dust and debris in the corners that suggest this place hadn't seen much activity in a very long time. The question is, where are the war machines now?
Nemiel's mind raced as he tried to think through the mystery.
If Archoy is with the rebels, he was in the process of trying to hand over the war machines to them when we arrived, he said. If the vehicles had sat in a depot for a century and a half, they would have been in need of some refurbishment. He would have taken them somewhere he and his minions could work on them without being disturbed, possibly even as early as several weeks before Horus's raid.
Ascalon shook his head. The manufactories would have been working at full output at that point. They couldn't possibly have used them.
Well, where else would they have the facilities they would need?
Nemiel asked. The tech marine spread his hands.
Other than the Titan Foundry, I can't think of any, he said. And I guarantee you the Legio Adepts would take a dim view of someone else using their facilities.
Nemiel looked to Cole.
Except that Legio Gladius isn't here. Someone else is running the lights over at the Foundry.